And so I have a question for you this morning, right? My question is, how many of you in here, and I want to see a show of hands on this, are married? How many here are married? All right, I see some hands in here. I have a question, you can put your hands down. I have another question for you. How many of you in here want to get married and plan to get married someday? Yeah, I see some hands. Okay, this is my version of Match.com. For all the people whose hands are up, the guys and the girls, look around, because there is in here, you know, you just never know, somebody. So you're like, a guy, I want to get married, and a girl, I want to get married. I'm like, all right, the math is not really too difficult to make. But in all seriousness, you can put your hands down. And for you put your hands up unless you feel so inclined. If I should ask people in here whether you're married or you're single, I'm like, how many of you plan to commit adultery? When I was thinking about this question, I actually didn't think it was pretty funny, but it is pretty funny. How many of you plan on being in an emotional affair after you're married or if you're married? How many of you plan on being addicted to porn? How many of you plan on being addicted to prescription drugs or illegal drugs or smoking semi-legal drugs? Yeah, you guys know what I mean. You know, the stuff that people say give you wisdom. I love today because I have, you know, people on Periscope can hear. I have a sister in here who's really funny. She's cracking me up. She gets my jokes. She's the sweetest lady ever. And see, no hands would go up because by and large, nobody plans to get married to do those things. But yet still, every day, as I said before, people get together and they make promises that 2 years, 7 years, 20 years into it, for some reason, they can't keep. And they go back and if you ask and you say, well, what is the problem? What happened? Oftentimes, what they'll tell you is really the symptom, and they're not telling you what the root cause is. And the reason they don't tell you the root cause is because they don't know what the root cause is. If somebody ends up in adultery and you're like, well, that's the reason why our marriage broke up. I'm here to tell you this morning that that's a symptom. The problem goes back further than that. It says, well, you know, it's because, you know, he's always, or she, because women tend to be addicted to porn. One person is addicted to porn and they can't be intimate with their wife unless there's a movie on. It's like, well, and the wife feels bad, or the husband, whoever feels bad, and it's like, well, what happened? How do we get here? And they say, well, that's the reason. I'm like, I'm here to tell you that's not the reason. That's a symptom behind the problem. So to this morning, we're going to talk about, really, what is it that causes people to be in that place where they're in a place that oftentimes by the time they get to a counselor, their mind's already made up. There is no turning back. And the counselor is just really checking the box that when somebody says, well, did you go to counseling? They say, yes, check. And I believe that the answer is found in really our theme verses for this whole series. It's in Genesis 2, and it continues 25 and 26. And in Genesis 2, 25, and I'll just kind of set it up before in case you weren't here or you don't know the story, is that God had just finished making the earth. And you know, I like, you know, people who say that there's a big bang. I'm like, yeah, God said it, bang, and it happened, right? So I believe in the big bang. Right? And, you know, God had created, he created the animals, and he created man to rule over the animals, and he said it's not good for a man to be alone, so he, like, put him to sleep, did some miracle, formed a woman, and looked at her, and the man was like, wow, I like this. Yeah, it's probably, he probably said, I like it, dithis, right, you know, in biblical speak. And he was so fascinated, and you want to cling to her. And so the author said, well, this is explains why a man leaves his father and his mother are joined to a wife, and the two are united into one. And he says, now the man and his wife were both naked, and they felt no shame. And I can't tell you how many times I've read in Genesis, and I've just flown past it because, well, yeah, that's logical. And it's easy to go past this verse and to just kind of just think of it as a straight thing. But I want to pause here for a second and say the key to the question that I asked earlier really lies in this verse. They were both naked, and they felt no shame. Because once you understand the key behind this verse, it will unlock your eyes and you will see some things that you've never seen before. The fact is that when God created marriage, he created it to be a place of unashamed nakedness. Of unashamed nakedness. And that nakedness was not only to be naked physically in the context of marriage, but to be naked emotionally, to be naked spiritually, to be naked mentally. And this is what Adam and Eve enjoyed in the garden. They enjoyed physical, spiritual, mental, emotional, put every al in there. And that's what they enjoyed in the garden. And they had total openness. They had total intimacy. And there were no secrets. They had no secrets. Like, literally, everything was exposed. And I believe that this is what God intended in the marriage relationship, which is unashamed nakedness in every single area of our lives. And, you know, that is the key to a happy and healthy relationship. And you know, this marriage series, I mean, it's a little PG-13, but it's not, because everything I'm talking about, if the Bible is PG-13, then that's what it is, right? It's really in the Bible. And so, you know, when I say about the key, and you think about it, it's logical, right? So a husband and wife, in the context of their home, in their context of their bedroom, if every time she has to change, the lights has to be off or she has to be in another room, that's a problem. If every time she comes to bed in flannel, that's a problem. I got to tell you, guys, I always go off script here, so I'm going off script right now, and my wife is now shaking her head, so I'm going to not look at her. So I hate flannel. Flannel is the most unattractive thing in the world, going to bed. So, you know, but if Donna comes to bed wearing flannel, I know we have a problem. But if a dude comes to bed in a three-piece suit, that's a problem. Tie and vest and all, that's a problem. And we know that. And unless you, just like you do physically, if you can't unpack emotionally, if you can't unpack spiritually, if you can't uncover yourself mentally in front of your spouse, that's a problem. And that is a seed that starts the process from which all the other things that you say you wouldn't do. It starts out with that seed of not being ashamedly naked in front of your spouse. And it eventually leads to destruction. It leads to destruction, and it leads to dissatisfaction, and it's a root of disillusionment, and eventually it's a destruction and dissolution of your relationship. And in Genesis 3, the Bible tells us what happens to Adam and Eve. And it's kind of a fascinating story. Some of you know the story and how they became un-naked, if I should use that term, and ashamed, and what caused a whole host of problems for them in their relationship. You see, it goes like this. one day, Eve was in the garden, and she was chilling out, observing everything, and she was, you know, checking out the garden, like, wow, this is beautiful, and life is all this good, and she saw something. She saw this forbidden fruit. She had everything that that fruit could provide, except she didn't have that fruit. You think, oftentimes, married couples have everything they ever wanted in their wife or their husband. And they're at the office, and they see the forbidden fruit. And when you think about the forbidden fruit, think about it as a metaphor. It's actually real, but think about it as a metaphor in the context of this message for really what it is. The thing that you really kind of think about, but you know you shouldn't do. You know you shouldn't partake of. And so she hears a voice. I want to say it's in her head, or it's physical, or whatever. It's not really important. There's these voices that come inside your head that says, take a longer look. Take a look. My. Sure looks good tonight. She has on her red dress and her high heels and some of that sweet perfume. And you think, girl, you are so fine. But you know you can't have it. And that's what was happening with the fruit. And so the devil, in the form of a serpent, came up and he says this. He says, now did God really say, you must not eat the fruit from any of the trees in the garden? And the devil does that, you know, it's like he takes you to the edge. He starts having you strip away, like, well, what did really God really say? And I talk about walking to the edge all the time. And what the devil was doing right here was like, well, there's nothing wrong with talking to somebody at work or at school. There's nothing wrong with talking. Did God really say you shouldn't talk to any other woman? Or the other? No. Did God say really you shouldn't smoke? God really didn't say that. He says, well, if it's bad for your body, but maybe one is not bad. And so Eve said this, you know, she goes, no, and this is like, think of the conversation. No, I can talk. I can eat of the fruit of all the trees, but it's only the fruit from the tree in the middle of the garden that we're not allowed to eat, because God said, you must not eat it or even touch it. Because if you do, you will die. And we all intrinsically know this. Think of all the things. Because these things just don't just happen. There's a process. A process of the devil chipping away at the edges. Chipping away at the edges and breaking down your defenses. And you're fighting back and he says, I know I'm not supposed to have it because if I touch it, it's going to be bad. And till eventually, the devil said this. He says, you're not going to die. You're not going to die. Come on. God's not going to kill you. Just one time. One smoke. One snort. One more drink. A little touch. Touching it is not that bad. And so, the woman was convinced. It's like, all right, just this one time. And she saw the tree was beautiful and its fruit was delicious. And she wanted it. And so she took the fruit and ate it. And the thing about sin is that sin is even more fun when you get somebody else it also. It's like, check this out. Have another blunt. Have another drink. Touch a little more. And the husband got involved. And he ate it too. And I'm going to rebuke the devil right here, right now, because he's messing with my, with all my electronic notes here. That won't come up. So we're just going to go. At that moment, their eyes were open and they suddenly felt ashamed at their nakedness. What they were unashamed before, unashamed nakedness, they felt unashamed. So they sewed fig leaves together to cover themselves. And go on to the next one. To cover themselves. And so they hid from the Lord among the trees. And they hid from the Lord among the trees. And everything that they had wanted to do, everything that had made their marriage successful, everything that was really good about their relationship disappeared in that moment. And in moments, they went into hiding from God. And we think that we can hide from God. We think that God won't really see, and God sees everything. You know, and so I was thinking through this. God said, if you touch it, you will die. And the fact is, sin always kills something. It just does. It just always kills something. And, you know, it says here in Romans 6:23 that the wages of sin is death. And the thing is that every single time you reach out to that old girlfriend from back in middle school, I wonder how she looks now, 50 years, 40 years later, 30 years later. Or that nice guy from high school, I wonder what he looks like on Instagram. I wonder if he has a Snapchat or whatever that you're going to look at. Every time that you do that, every time you go to lunch with a female coworker or a male coworker, it's not really every time, but every time you like really look forward to going to lunch with a female and male coworker that's not your spouse and so forth, so on, and just you alone. What you're doing here is that you're planting a seed. You see, the devil works on your mind, and he doesn't normally make you take big leaps. He gives you one step at a time. Did God really say you must not eat of any fruit? Did God say you mustn't go out to lunch? No, there's nothing wrong with that. So the seed is really what we're talking about. And every time you do that, every time something becomes more than a passing thought, and you linger on it, you're watering, you're planting and watering a seed of sin. And sin always kills something. It's paycheck. The wages, the paycheck of sin is death. And we like to play around with it and like, you're not going to die. You're not. Sin will always take you further than you want to go. It will always make you give up more than you're willing to give. It's a deceiver. Actually, I stole those lines from a song Ingrid wrote. But a really good line. And so, really, the key to it is to be transparent. To be transparent with your spouse. And some of you may be saying, well, Pastor Gary, I know it's easy for you to do. I see your Facebook posts. You and your wife and family look like you all got it all together. Everybody's smiling. We got one kid doing this. We have another one doing this. Like, you guys got it all together, and it's a couple things. You don't see our struggles. See, Facebook and Instagram is really about a highlight reel. It's not about real life, right? And I'm telling you this not because I have anything to hide. I'm going to come out with some big confession on the platform here, because I'm not. Because, well, I don't have anything to confess, and I believe Donna doesn't have anything to confess. But we didn't get here by just a single leap. We got here through a process of seeing what happens when you're not transparent with the person that you're not, when you're not unashamedly, what was that word I used? You're unashamed, unashamedly naked. We see what happens when that is not paramount in your life. We see it with all the people who are counseling, like, well, what happened? And the stories are always the same, and everybody thinks that they're different. And the stories are the same. They all start with an innocent passing thought that God say, you're really not supposed to touch the fruits. And I tell you that I'm going to tell you a story. I was dating Donna, and we were dating, And by the way, you know, you kind of wonder, why aren't people more transparent? Well, I'm going to tell you why in this story that I'm going to tell you about Donna and me. So, in my teenage years, let's just say, I'm always over here laughing. Let's just say I did some things that I wasn't supposed to do, a lot of things that I wasn't supposed to do. I had skeletons. I had ravens in my closet. So you couldn't open a closet, man, be like a whole kind of birds inside there. They're like, I didn't tell Donna about some of the stuff. I didn't tell Donna about some of the really bad stuff because, number one, I was ashamed. I was ashamed because I knew better. But I still did them anyway. And I had asked God for forgiveness, and God, you know, I guess intellectually I knew he forgave me, but in my heart of hearts, I was still struggling with the fact that, well, how could I have ever done some of these things that I did, especially the fact that I've asked him for forgiveness of it over and over again, and I just go back and do the exact same thing. And I'm like, I'd be sitting in the car, like at a moment, at a critical moment in time, I'm like, did God really say I shouldn't? And probably many of you can identify with that. The reason why you're not transparent with your spouse is because you feel ashamed and you want to put on fig leaves, cover it up. But another reason was pride. See, by the time that Donna and I were dating, I was already now involved in ministry, and I was coming up, you know, and got involved in church, and people were now starting to look up to me. And while all that stuff was behind me, and I didn't want to tell her all of this, because by now, she was looking up to me too. I was a godly man. What I didn't have in height, I made up in other ways. She was like, I felt on a pedestal. And I remember telling her sometimes, you just really put too much trust in me. I always say, you don't know me, girl. You don't know me. You know who I is? And the pride in me didn't want to mess with that image of who she thought I was. Or who I was growing to be, but not that stuff. Third reason was fear. Because if I told her all of this, maybe she would not want to be with me. She'd want to leave me. for the next short guy. She wouldn't see me as the man anymore. The leader. Someone she could trust and look up to. She'd be like disappointed in me, and she wouldn't want me. And you guys, story, I'd work way too hard and too long to get her to make that happen. And shame, pride, and fear kept me from being honest. Kept me in bondage until one day, a friend of mine who I had trusted with some of this stuff, we got into a little problem, and he decided that he was going to tell. And he told somebody else. He didn't tell Donna, but I knew that was coming next. He told somebody, and he let out everything. Well, everything that he knew, because there was even more stuff. And I'm like, snap. I'm in a heap of trouble. Because I was a slave to my shame, pride, my fear. And right there, that moment, I'm like, am I going to be a slave for the rest of my life or not? And I called up Donna. I'm like, girl, we got to talk. And we talked, and I unloaded on her pretty much everything. Well, everything. I mean, I didn't go into gory details, but literally everything. And I made a pact with her that day. And I said to her, there'll be no secrets. Nobody will ever be able to hold something up over me and say, I can tell Donna this. It says, from this point on, I am going to be unashamedly naked. You're going to hear the good, the bad, and the ugly. You're going to hear every thought that goes on in my mind. And when you cringe, just don't cringe too much. And I tell you, it was liberating. And so I try to do that. And it's hard. It's hard sometimes to do that, you know. But you see, for others of you, it's trust, right? It's a fourth one there. It's like, if I go and tell my wife or I'm going to tell my husband, the first thing that she's going to do, she's going to go tell her mom. Or she's going to tell her girlfriends. And every time I walk and her girlfriends see me, they're like, And you can't trust. You don't want to trust them with the truth because they can't handle the truth. So you go back and you put on your fig leaves and you cover up and you sit there in your shame. Instead of being unashamedly naked, you're naked and covered up in secrecy. And the devil is over there grinning from ear to ear because he knows all you're doing is just planting and watering that seed. And it's growing into what will eventually come the thing that destroys your marriage. Folks, I want to tell you something this morning, that secrecy destroys intimacy. You want to know what the root cause is? Secrecy, oftentimes, and secrecy destroys intimacy. Lack of intimacy destroys communication. Lack of communication destroys relationships. Lack of relationship destroys your marriage. Secrecy will eventually destroy your marriage. Because God created us with a need for nakedness in our body, in our soul, and in our spirit. And marriage was meant to be that place where it was safe to be naked, because only by sharing yourselves will you truly experience the happy and the healthy joy that is meant to be in an intimate relationship with a person. And many of us are killing our relationships with secrets. And they have guilt, pride, fear, shame, and all that that's holding us back. And you guys, like, sometimes the men, I mean, if I say this to my wife, she's going to give me a tongue lashing. There's nothing helpful that she's going to say. Some of you men are so jealous that if my woman ever looks at another man, she's like, okay, I just won't tell you. I tell you, so many people miss this principle of transparency within their marriage. And oftentimes the words that you say are hurtful and they're harsh and they're spiteful and they're unforgiving. And you're driving a dagger into your relationships from it, and you every time you have an unresolved argument, you're driving a dagger into it. And the fact of openness was meant to resolve stuff, not to create stuff that leaves unresolved. And every time you do this as a spouse, you're causing your partner to cover up with some more fig leaves. I want to tell you this morning, don't fall into that trap. Don't fall into that trap. So as few thoughts for you. I'll close up in about 5 to 7 minutes or so that you can catch the end of the game. No, that's not the reason. I'm actually just planning. I call these the three principles of transparency. The number one is, if you want to practice a principle of transparency, you got to talk. You got to talk to your spouse when you come home in the daytime. Do not underestimate the value of small talk. And for guys, it's really hard. I don't know how true it is, but they say men speaks an average of 5,000 words a day. Women speaks an average of 25,000 words per day. Women speak 5 times as much. By the time men come home from work, they're talked out. And women's like, I got a whole lot more talking to do. And for me, I give presentations all day at work. I talk all day at work. So I'm really talked out. And it's something that I didn't always do. But it's like, force myself to do small talk because I'm talked out. Because in the little conversations, that's when you find out stuff. That name that keeps appearing over and over and over and over again, where in your mind, it's innocence. But for the person who's listening, I'm like, you're spending an awful lot of time. And it starts a seed for where that person can start to have a conversation, even if it's just 15 minutes that you carve out and says, we're going to have small talk. The second thing to do is, well, stay on the talk thing, is listen. Don't just talk, listen. And ask questions. You can find out a whole lot more about just listening and asking questions than you can by talking. By the way, your questions also reveal what's in your head. So number one, first principle of transparency is talk. The second principle of transparency is to reveal or uncover. If folks, we got to force ourselves to be transparent. It's hard because it's vulnerable. It's in a place, but by and large, most people think of nakedness as being uncomfortable. It's just so open. But you got to force yourself to be transparent. And the things that are going on in your head, you got to say it. You got to say, she's really cute. Or he's fine. Like, I tease my wife all the time. Like these stallion men that were running. If you guys ever have a chance, ask Dawn about the stallion men. She was jogging one day and four specimen of men came up and they, and she talked about these men for like years. She said, oh, they were just so fine. I'm like, so I started jogging too. So I wonder, she never did say, what a fine specimen of a stallion. She calls me other things, but she has never been called a fine specimen of a stallion, whatever she says. But I ain't jealous. I'm not mad or anything like that, you know. Yeah. Force yourself to be transparent. But when they do, force yourself also to not overreact in anger. And see that verse there that says, don't let anger control you. Because sometimes they'll tell you stuff and it's a little bit hard, a little bit, man, you got to control that anger. Because that anger gives a foothold to the devil. And those harsh and hurtful words and all those things that come back, she's got to hold back because they're being naked. Right? And that brings us to the third thing, the third principle of transparency is to help. See, all that, all this stuff is because you were put there, and it's not just the woman being a helpmeet for man, it's for the man being a helpmeet also for the woman to be the protector, to be the you know, to have every piece around them, to guard them, to prevent things from coming in. And so when they are transparent, and when you're transparent, you have no armors on. Darts can be fired, and those darts that are fired will hurt more than when you have your guard up. And so what you got to do is to help. You're there to help, not to cause more problem. And part of how you help is that you forgive. You forgive. And the thing is that it's easy to forgive the small thing than it is before it gets to the big thing. Because if there's no transparency, you're going to be forced with facing whether or not you're going to forgive the big thing as opposed to the small thing. You help. The second thing is, in helping, you know, the first one is forgive. The second way is to help them come up with ways to get out of that thing which is holding them and messing with them. My wife comes up with some of the best suggestions in the world about things that are potential strongholds before they become, way before they become a problem. I give her props. She's really, really good at coming up with stuff. And the third thing in terms of helping, which is probably the thing that you should be doing all along from the start, is you got to be on your knees. Because the devil is out there always looking for ways to deceive, always looking for ways to destroy. That's his job. You know, Satan's paycheck is death. The devil's paycheck is to, he gets paid by every time he sees you fall into deception. You got to be on your knees. And every day when my wife is going out, or I'm going out, or, you know, I do the kids too, but I'm talking in the context of marriage, you cover your spouse from head to toe. And you build them up from toe to head. Don't let the devil get a foothold in your life. Here's this verse here that I want to leave you with. It says, but build up one another every day. Every day. Do it as long as there's still time. None of you will become stubborn and you won't be fooled. My sins, tricks. So there's our three our principles, which is talk, reveal, which is to uncover, and to help. And I, you know, every one of these, I leave you with a promise. But today, there's these two promises that I want each one of you guys to make to each of your respective spouses. Promise number one is this. I promise to be unashamedly transparent with my spouse. I promise to be unashamedly transparent with my spouse. And because today is World Cup Sunday, you get two. Here's the second one. I promise to be, well, it has a typo in there. I promise to help my spouse be unashamedly transparent. See, one is being that with your spouse, but the other one is helping your spouse to be unashamedly transparent. And single folks, as I, right before I go to prayer, I just want to leave you with this. You have an advantage because you're seeing all this stuff before. A lot of people didn't get all this stuff before, but you're seeing it and you're getting all this stuff before. And I want to tell you this. Here's my advice to you. If you're dating, listen up. Because all those people raised their hands. Yeah. If you're dating and the person that you're dating cannot have conversations with you, cannot have small talk with you. You better take a stock. You better take a stock that they can have small talk and conversations. If you're dating a person and they make it really exceedingly difficult for you to open to them, they go ballistic. It's time to reevaluate that relationship. And the final thing is, if you're dating a person and they do nothing to help you, it's time to move on. My prayer this morning is that all of us will practice this principle of transparency. Let's just rise as I pray, and I'll turn over to the praise team to close the meeting.